can I say, I think the most important thing, I think, was the historic moment of the Redfern statement by Congress, National Congress of Australia's First People, and the peak bodies who were there. In respect of that, and with respect to that, I attended to launch Labor's Indigenous Affairs policy, announcing $15 million for Congress and $57 million for the Children and Family Centres, and also that we would abolish the Indigenous Advancement Strategy and put our emphasis on closing the gap. We're resetting the arrangements between Indigenous organisations and peak bodies and a future Labor government. So can I say, oh, that was an historic moment for me. I think it was really important that Labor do that. We did it deliberately because we wanted to seize the moment but showed respect and recognise what a historic moment it was for Congress and all the peak bodies to do that.
Obviously, that's important because talking about working closely with National Congress of Australia's First Peoples, that means that the Labor Party would be interested in working side by side with Indigenous people.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it was historic to do that. We want to work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, not do things for them. It's a big difference. I think standing there really sent a message that in a sort of a vibrant, diverse country like Australia, that it was unacceptable that we not acknowledge peak body who represents Indigenous people around the country and the people whose lives, families and communities are impacted by decisions made by government. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples deserve access to opportunities, to responsibilities, to equitable outcomes, which all Australians enjoy, but they don't naturally or historically have enjoyed. So I think genuine reconciliation is important, and that was a very historic moment that Labor did that. And in response to an equally historic moment, the Redfern statement.
Well, I wanted to move also into the discussion around your policy around Labor's Your Child, Our Future plan, because you do have policy around lives and education of Indigenous children and investing in Indigenous students and teachers. So how will this policy be implemented, and what changes would we see that will improve the education curriculum for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children?
Well, like health, education is really critical to Labor Party thinking. It's in our DNA, and one of the things we really want is that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children reach their full potential, and the best chance in life, I'm sure you experienced it, I certainly did, was through a great education. We want to put through Your Child, Our Future, the Gonski needs-based funding permanently at the heart of our school system. We want to make sure that every Indigenous kid gets access to the best facilities, the best teachers, to make sure that they get access to the resources, the early intervention, literacy and numeracy programs, breakfast club, targeted professional development for teaching so they get the best teachers possible, and one-on-one tutoring and mentoring. So Labor, as part of that Gonski needs-based funding model, will put in about $36, $37 billion in schools over the next decade. And, you know, that's $3.8 billion more than the Liberals will put in the next couple of years. And it'll boost by more than 100 million Indigenous students at school and boost the number of Indigenous teachers through teacher scholarship. 195,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids will benefit from additional support. Queensland's not only surpassed New South Wales in the state of origin, can I say, but we've surpassed them in the number of Indigenous kids going to our primary schools and high schools. That's important for my home state of Queensland, but it's also important for New South Wales and for kids around the country to make sure they get access to those resources in classrooms, and so we can get improved results for Indigenous kids.
Yeah, it needs to be right across Australia, not just in particular areas.
Absolutely, right across Australia. Absolutely. And can I say, one of the big things we've done as well as that, absolutely, whether it's in a remote or regional area, wherever it is, it needs to be. Whether you're in Barunga or Utopia, in Halls Creek, the Kimberley, or in Perth, in Cooper Pedy, or the AP Wildlands, doesn't matter where it is, those kids could get access to the same education the kids in Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane get. We're fair dinkum about closing the gap and reconciliation in the country. We've got to do it. We've just got to do it. It's just critical.
In the last fortnight, the Prime Minister's Cabinet responded to Minister Bill Shorten's support for a treaty with Australia's First Peoples. Now, the Liberal Party said that they will not support a treaty negotiation at this point because it will risk the constitutional recognition process. So how would your Cabinet, or and particularly regarding your portfolio, support a treaty negotiation?
Well, we've said in the first term of a Shorten Labor government that we'll put emphasis on constitutional recognition. We strongly believe that symbolic or preambular change won't cut it. We don't think the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people support it. We don't think the general population will support it either. So it needs to be real and substantive change, and that's why we supported the Joint Standing Committee on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander constitutional recognition. We support the expert panel. We now support the referendum council made up of respected Indigenous leaders. So we've supported that. What Labor has always said, and we've never ruled out the idea of treaty or treaty arrangements, let's have a conversation post-constitutional recognition to what type of arrangement or settlement should take place in the country. If that is a treaty or treaties, that's a priority for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. It's worthy of discussion. It's an idea that we should talk about. Because if you're going to tell the truth about this country, you can't just say reconciliation takes place on one event. No one said when voting rights came in this country in the early 60s, that was the end. You had to have 67 referendums. You had to have native title and Mabo. You needed to have that. Get rid of that myth of terra nullis. You had to have Gough Whitlam putting the sand through Vincent Lingiari's fingers. You had to have Paul Keating telling the truth in Redfern speech by him. And you had to have that, you know, the apology by Kevin Rudd. And I think, can I just say, you had to have a Redfern statement in this campaign by Congress and in peak bodies. But we can't think that if we just do constitutional recognition, that's the end of the matter. I think that's another step on the process of reconciliation. And perhaps treaty or treaty arrangements, which are springing up everywhere all over the place with local councils and the like. Perhaps that's the next step. But let's make sure that the hopes and aspirations and dreams of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are met so we can talk about these issues and talk honestly and openly and candidly with each other.
Well, I understand the process of the constitutional recognition and that it will amend two sections where race powers will be removed and to see an end to those means that decisions such as the Northern Territory intervention can't go ahead or any further decision making that include those race powers. So if the Labor Party is elected in, will the referendum date still be set for next year regarding constitutional recognition? Yeah, if you guys get in.
The terms could be a bit more complicated than that. The actual terms of the referendum and what's going to be in it haven't been determined. The Joint Select Committee and the expert panel all recommended that we include a prohibition against racial discrimination, which is what you're referring to. That's up to the referendum council and the government of the day and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to put that, to work out what the terms are. But we have said a priority in the first term of a shortened Labor government will be putting this to the vote. Now, we have always said that if it's the 27th of May 2017, if that's a suitable date, it may be, it might be. We've got to get a process finalised and community awareness of that issue high enough to ensure that people are engaged so we can get success. We haven't had success for over nearly 40 years. Last referendum was in the mid to late 70s. We can't get that process done and get the referendum passed unless we do those things that I've talked about. But we believe we can do that in our first term of government. We certainly do.
You're listening to SBS Radio Living Black. I'm Kirsten Lindsay and I'm speaking with the ALP Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Shane Newman. I want to move on to one of the other policies around a national approach to suicide prevention. So recently, just in the last week, there's been a report on the freezing of funds to Headspace, which could potentially close the organisation down. Mm. By looking at your policy, it's understood that we are at crisis point when it comes to suicide, not only for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but also right across Australia. But we're having a very big problem with our children. How will treatment services be improved? What is the key focus regarding support as a national approach to suicide prevention?
Well, one thing we won't do is cut the funding for Headspace or the early psychosis centres, which the Coalition was proposing to do. We won't do that. There's nearly 100 Headspace operations around the country, including, by the way, in my electorate in Ipswich, so I'm very happy with them. They do it. For example, let me give you one illustration. The Headspace in my electorate alone has seen an enormous number of people go through. This is just one example, can I tell you, in my area. We've seen, since opening in 2013, over 2,000 young people being seen and provided 11,000 occasions of service. Now, there's nearly 100 of those around the country, so we're going to support them. We're also going to support the 6 early psychosis centres around the country as well. But we have committed ourselves to a National Mental Health Commission's target to reduce suicides by 50% over the next 10 years. We want to make sure that communities are empowered and strengthened to drive culturally relevant local solutions. We're going to partner with Indigenous communities, work with them to talk about a safe and respectful approach. We will establish 12 regional initiatives. Now, we haven't just said it's going to be in urban areas, as you correctly pointed out. It's going to be regional and remote communities. We've identified one of those has got to be up in the Kimberley because we've seen the problem that has happened recently when there's been horrendous circumstances when so many young people, particularly over in the west and up in the Kimberley, have experienced this terrible despair. They get to a point where they wish to take their lives and do so. You know, 7 Australians take their life every day. It's just unacceptable. So we're going to identify with states and territory governments and with local Indigenous communities those locations within the first 100 days of a shortened Labor government. And we're going to work with Indigenous health organisations, the ARCHOs, and try and develop, and we will develop, a national Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander mental health plan. And we would have put money towards this. It's really important we do so. We're going to task the National Indigenous Health Quality Council to work with us to develop that mental health plan. And we're going to work with peak bodies, as I mentioned before. It's really, really critical we do that. So we put money aside, about $84 million across this space for these types of programs. So we are committed to it and we will do it.
I want to move into the area of community justice and safety. I mean, I see that you do have Indigenous justice targets. So is that something that you're working with the Change the Record Coalition around, or can you talk a little bit about the policy around justice targets?
I think you're dead right. I mean, we are going to work with the Change the Record Coalition. I commend them. They're doing tremendous work. They're instrumental in driving this change. We've got a situation where nearly I think it's 15.5 times an Indigenous adult is more likely to be incarcerated than a non-Indigenous person, and about 24 times more likely Indigenous youth to be incarcerated. It's just not good enough. And we've got to think about this more holistically as well. When you've got a situation where an Aboriginal woman's 34 times more likely to be hospitalised by family violence, it's broader than just that. Domestic violence services, everything from making homes safer, assistance in terms of programs, but also recognition and tracking and mapping of domestic violence to see if there's hotspots. But providing funding for community organisations and services like Family Violence Prevention Legal Services, restoring funding to Aboriginal legal services, which we've announced we're going to reverse the cuts that the Turnbull Liberal government's going to do. But we are going to develop justice targets. I'm going to put them on the COAG process, first COAG meeting, and we're going to talk with the Congress and we're going to talk with the Change the Record campaign to develop those targets and to work out measurable benchmarks and review our progress. They're sensible ideas. The current government has backed away from a bipartisan approach on just development of justice targets. We're also going to address the national crisis levels of incarceration and victimisation. The way we're going to do that is also on a justice reinvestment approach. Now, this has been trialled and been very successful in America. So we need clearinghouse, we need proper evaluations of those programs, such as at Burke, that's happening. A dollar spent in a prison, a dollar not spent to support a family and an individual. We're going to think about how we can do it culturally and relevantly and do it with support of local community. So we're committed to finding 3 justice reinvestment sites to support communities to develop strategies and to coordinate those services to break that cycle of recidivism. Recidivism is a terrible, terrible thing. People going back to jail, knowing no better, achieving nothing further in the outcome. Imagine what it's like for their families and the individuals concerned. We've got to address that issue. We've got to break that cycle. So doing that, we're going to do it in urban areas, we're going to do it in remote areas, we're going to do it in regional areas. We're going to identify those sites if we come to government. And we're going to do it in response and with the support of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organisations and communities.
We are way past the point of having a talk about it now.
We are. It's a tragedy. It's a shame. It's a national disgrace.
The work's been done as far as the Change the Record Coalition and their blueprint for change. The work's been done. We've got the evidence to state these programs will actually, diversionary programs, will start reducing the risks of incarceration. One of the things that I noticed in the disadvantage report, which was, you know, right across Australia, but when it came to community safety and justice, that more money was still being spent on prisons or building prisons.
Not on diversionary programs. For example, the prison through care funding been cut by the current government.
So it's about divesting from prisons and putting that money back into community diversion. Another thing, you talked about housing.
International supports, that's where they've come out with their evaluation of justice reinvestment. Mick Gooder, the Social Justice Commissioner, has also come out strongly in relation to this. So has Congress. We're on the right track. We've got a lot of good support from people in relation to this. ANTAR has as well. We really believe we're on the right track there, but we've got to adopt world's best practice, and we haven't done it systematically and methodically in Australia, and we've got to do it.
You talked about housing, and I understand that, you know, that we've got a lot of women that are in remand who aren't even being sentenced, that are being held there because they don't have safe housing to go to because of their family violence situations. But also just Indigenous housing in general, like not specifically placing it in a basket around family violence, but Indigenous housing. We have got a housing crisis. Anything else that's going to come up around housing and support for more public housing and accessible housing for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people?
Yeah, well, we have said that we will commit ourselves to a national partnership arrangement with respect to remote Indigenous housing, like Ngāti Pari, and even do it better. Trouble with a lot of that was that a lot of the administration costs were wasted by the Northern Territory government and other government. We've made it crystal clear that you can't be wasting up to 40% of that money in that administration. We're going to put real benchmarks and guidelines in relation to that. We need, and for discussions I've had in the Territory and elsewhere, we need to make sure that that's going to local people who can do local work for local solutions. But we've also got to think about how we can reduce and improve housing affordability in urban areas and improve social housing, and we will, and work with states and territories across this. The Liberals have just slashed and burned across this space. One of the things we're going to try and do to take a bit of heat out the market is the negative gearing policy we've done in terms of getting rid of the exemptions for older established properties from the middle of next year, because most of those concessions go to the top end of town, and a lot of it comes into speculation. That puts pressure on people who can't afford to actually bid at auctions and in the market. So according to the independent evidence that's taken place, that'll put some downward pressure in terms of the housing market and also assist Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and people generally in relation to that. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff in terms of jobs. Now, one of the biggest reasons for homelessness is people don't have jobs. We have got programs which we've announced repeatedly during the course of the election in relation to jobs programs. We announced that Bill announced another one at the policy launch the other day about tax cuts for small business, because many Indigenous people are in small business. I've met them all over the countryside, and they're the sort of things that we need to do. We can't afford to have Indigenous people unemployed, because that's a sure way to homelessness. You know? There's a lot of stuff we're doing in terms of education, health, jobs, housing and the like, where there's a gulf between what Labor's proposing and what the Coalition's proposing. A less paternalistic, a more inclusive, consultative approach, a closing the gap approach, as opposed to an advancement type approach from the Coalition, which is really pejorative and insulting the way the government's acted and done things for and to Aboriginal people rather than with them.
Would you support the move in the future for an Indigenous Minister for Indigenous Affairs?
Well, I'm sure that we will have that at some stage in the future. It's up to the party rooms and the Prime Minister to make those decisions. But we're getting a record number of Indigenous people from the Labor Party standing at this election. We've got some tremendous candidates. Senator Pat Dodson, the father of reconciliation, former deputy leader of the opposition in the New South Wales government and parliament, and Linda Burney standing in Barton. We've got Melindiri McCarthy's running for us in the Senate in the Northern Territory. We've got a record number of Indigenous candidates, and I expect and look forward to the day when some stage we not just have a Indigenous Minister for Indigenous Affairs, we have an Indigenous Prime Minister. I look forward to that day, and Australians will not bat an eyelid when we really are a fully reconciled country, when just having an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander as our Prime Minister is as natural as anything.
We might not see that in our lifetime.
I hope we do.
Mr. Newman.
I sincerely hope we do.
Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you.